Welcome back, everybody. We are diving deep today into Deuteronomy, chapters 9 through 11, to be exact.
Looking forward to it.
Always a lot to unpack in Deuteronomy. And this deep dive, it's not just about, like, you know, what these chapters say, but really kind of getting into that, like, why, you know, like, what makes them tick? Why do they matter?
Yeah, and I think what's so interesting about these chapters in particular is they're all about this idea of, like, deeper meaning and motivation.
Right. Yeah. Like Deuteronomy 9, for instance, Moses, he's, you know, he's preaching to the Israelites and he's kind of tackling this like misconception they had about righteousness.
Right.
Like they thought if they were righteous, that meant automatic victory.
Yeah. It's almost like they had this like, I don't know, mathematical formula in their heads.
Right.
Like you take their righteousness, you add in the wickedness of the other nations and boom.
Guaranteed victory.
Guaranteed victory. Like a divine cheat code for winning wars.
So they thought they're the heroes. The other nations are the villains. And like victory is a foregone conclusion.
Precisely. But as you can imagine, that is a very dangerous way of thinking.
Uh-huh.
It breeds arrogance. You know, it creates this false sense of self-reliance.
You're forgetting about God's role entirely.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, you know, it's a trap that I think is easy to fall into, even today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like when we ace a test and we think it's all because of like our own brilliance.
Totally.
You know, it's good to be reminded to stay humble.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what Moses is doing here. You know, he's reminding them and he's reminding us.
Right.
The true equation for victory. It's not our own, you know, perceived righteousness. It's about God's faithfulness.
It's about God's faithfulness. So they were receiving a gift, not something they'd earned. Now, Deuteronomy 10, we take kind of a turn here.
We do.
Towards poetry.
Yeah.
And before anyone tunes out, like thinking, oh, no, we're going to analyze flowery language.
Yeah.
Remember, poetry in the Bible, it's not really about the flowery language. It's about this powerful repetition,
mm-hmm.
you know, that drives home a point.
Exactly. It's about emphasis.
Yeah. And it's fascinating how this section in Deuteronomy 10, it like really distills the essence of what God desires from his people.
It does.
Right?
Say.
And it even emphasizes that the laws, which can sometimes seem a bit restrictive on the surface.
Right.
You know, like you can't do this, you can't do that. But they're actually for their benefit.
Right.
This phrase, for your good, really pops out.
Yeah, absolutely. And the structure of this section really emphasizes that beautifully.
Okay.
So we see this poetic parallelism. Hmm. And it uses two pairs of verses to showcase God's majesty and his actions.
Okay, break down these power verses for me. I got to hear this.
Okay, so the first pair, it emphasizes this stark contrast. You have God who owns everything, the entire universe.
Okay.
Yet he chooses to love and to favor these specific people.
The Israelites.
The Israelites, yeah.
So it's about this immense power coupled with this really focused love.
Exactly.
Okay.
Then the second pair.
Yeah.
It reinforces this by describing God as this ultimate king, the God of gods, Lord of lords. Yet he chooses to care for the most vulnerable in society.
The widows, the orphans, the foreigners.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. It really challenges this idea of God as this distant, uncaring deity.
It does.
Right. He's active. He's compassionate.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems like there's even this call to action embedded within this poetry.
There is.
Because God has shown them this, like, incredible heaved love, this unwavering, steadfast love.
Right.
They're called to do the same. But then it also mentions circumcising their hearts.
Yeah.
What does that even mean?
It's a powerful metaphor. Obviously not talking about, you know, a physical act.
Right.
But it's about removing the barriers that prevent them from really fully receiving God's love.
Okay.
And extending it to others.
It's about becoming receptive.
It's about becoming receptive and reflecting God's compassion in their actions.
It makes you think about how we build up walls around our own hearts, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Sometimes, yeah.
And this call to action, it resonates just as strongly today, you know? It challenges us to examine our own hearts,
mm-hmm.
to let go of any hard-heartedness, and really embrace a posture of compassion.
Now, Deuteronomy 11, we get into this fascinating comparison between Egypt and the Promised Land.
Yeah.
And Moses is essentially saying, you know, hey, choose wisely.
Choose wisely. And the imagery here is striking.
Okay.
It even uses this phrase about watering with your foot.
watering with your foot.
Wow, it sounds a little bizarre on the surface.
That's not something you see every day.
You don't. But when you understand the context of ancient Egyptian irrigation, it makes perfect sense.
Okay.
They had these elaborate systems where they used their feet to control the flow of water in trenches.
Wow. See, I never knew that. It's amazing how, like, historical context can really illuminate these, you know, strange-sounding phrases.
It really does. It sheds new light on things.
Yeah.
But then, beyond that literal practice, there's this deeper symbolism at play. Egypt, it represents this ease, you know, this self-sufficiency, where the Israelites, they could rely on their own efforts, their ingenuity.
Right.
But the Promised Land, it was different. It was a land dependent on rainfall, symbolizing their need to rely on God.
So their livelihood, their very existence was in God's hands.
Exactly.
Wow. That must have been a pretty humbling realization.
I think so. And this whole idea of dependence, it kind of sets the stage for this command to renew the covenant at Mounts Gerizim and Ebal, which we'll get into more a little bit later. But these mountains, they weren't chosen randomly. They were very strategically located, and they were visible from that main road that went through the hill country.
So imagine you're an Israelite traveling through the land. You literally cannot miss these two mountains looming on either side of the road.
Right.
It's like this built-in visual reminder of that covenant that they made with God.
Exactly.
With all of its blessings and curses.
It was a constant nudge to choose obedience.
Wow. So it's not just a ceremony that you go through one time and forget about.
Right.
It's woven into the very landscape that they inhabit.
Precisely. Moses understood the power of these physical landmarks.
Right.
To shape their thinking, their behavior.
Wow.
By renewing that covenant at Gerizim and Ebal, they were essentially embedding the memory of that covenant into the land itself.
It makes me wonder if there are parallels in our own lives, you know? Mm-hmm. Are there places that hold, like, special significance for us because of the memories or the commitments associated with them?
It's a great question. Something to think about.
Yeah.
But for the Israelites, this connection between the physical land and their spiritual covenant was paramount.
Right.
They were entering a place where their old ways of thinking, that Egyptian mindset of self-sufficiency,
right,
that wasn't going to work anymore.
Right. So it was all connected. You
right.
know, this whole, like, the agricultural calendar, the covenant renewal, the warnings against idolatry.
Yes.
It's like prepping them for this totally different worldview.
It is. It's a blueprint for living in a land where their blessing is tied to obedience.
Right.
Where abundance is a gift and not a right.
And it makes those seemingly strange details, like, you know, watering with your foot in these specific mountains, it makes them feel so much richer.
It does.
Like, they become these powerful symbols pointing to this deeper truth.
They highlight this constant tension between self-reliance and dependence on God. And that tension, it's something we still grapple with today.
Right.
Even if our promised land, so to speak, looks a little bit different.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. And speaking of the details of their lives, let's dive into the actual law code laid out in Deuteronomy chapters 12 through 26.
Okay.
Now, I know. Law code doesn't exactly scream excitement. But trust me, there's a lot to unpack here.
And this agricultural calendar, you know, it wasn't just about practicality. It's fascinating how deeply intertwined it was with their spiritual lives.
Okay. So how does a calendar become spiritual? I'm having a little trouble picturing that.
Well, think about the shift they were going through, the Israelites. Right. From Egypt to the Promised Land.
Right.
In Egypt, you know, with the Nile, they had this predictable abundance. Remember that whole watering with your foot image? Mm-hmm. It speaks to the sense of self-sufficiency.
Okay.
But in the Promised Land, their survival depended on rainfall, which was completely beyond their control.
So their livelihood, their very existence,
yeah,
was in God's hands.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where the spiritual dimension of this calendar really comes in.
Sure.
So Deuteronomy 11, it lays out this cycle starting with the early rains, which are essential for softening the ground for planting.
Okay.
Then you have the latter rains, which are crucial for bringing the crops to maturity.
So the early rain is like planting a seed of hope.
Hmm.
And the latter rain represents its fulfillment.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
Yeah.
It really is. And then to kind of represent the abundance the land produces, Deuteronomy uses the shorthand. Grain, new wine, and oil.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
The trifecta of agricultural bounty.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love how those three elements, like wheat, wine, and oil, You know, they speak to a complete cycle of provision.
Yeah.
Wheat is the staff of life, right?
Right.
Wine for celebration and joy.
Yeah.
And oil for fuel, for healing, for nourishment. It's almost poetic.
It is. And it's also important to note that this provision, it extends even to their cattle.
Okay.
So there's this sense of really comprehensive care. It's a reminder that their reliance on God, it was all-encompassing.
Like God saying, I got this, just trust me.
Yeah.
But then it takes a little bit of a turn, doesn't it?
It does.
Because with this blessing comes a warning.
Yes. Deuteronomy 11 cautions them, right?
Yeah.
It says, don't let your hearts be deceived and turn away to serve other gods.
It's like a reminder to stay grounded, to remember the source of their blessings.
Yeah. And it's easy to forget that when things are going well.
It is.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's why, after describing this idyllic picture of the promised land and its agricultural rhythm, Moses gives them a specific instruction.
Okay.
They need to formally renew the covenant, the one they made at Mount Sinai.
Okay.
But this time, it's going to happen within the land itself.
It's almost like, you know, a vow renewal.
Yeah.
But now with the lived experience of the promised land, to give it that deeper meaning.
Exactly. And the location Moses chooses for this is really significant. Mounts Gerizim and Ebal.
Okay.
As we talked about before, these mountains are strategically located right on that main route through the region. They would serve as those constant visible reminders.
So it's not just a ceremony they do once and forget about. It's like woven into the landscape they inhabit.
Precisely. Moses, he understood the power of physical landmarks to shape their thinking and behavior.
Mm-hmm.
By renewing the covenant at Gerizim and Ebal, they're essentially embedding the memory of that covenant into the land itself.
It makes me think, are there parallels in our own lives? You know,
are there places that hold like a special significance for us because of memories or commitments associated with them?
It's a great question.
Yeah.
Worth considering.
Yeah.
But for the Israelites, this connection between the physical land and their spiritual covenant was paramount.
Right.
They were entering a place where their old ways of thinking, you know, that Egyptian mindset of self-sufficiency.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to work anymore.
So the agricultural calendar, the covenant renewal, the warnings against idolatry, it's all connected.
It is.
It's about prepping them for this totally different worldview.
Yes. It's a blueprint for living in a land where their blessing is tied to obedience, where abundance is a gift, not a right.
And it makes those, you know, seemingly strange details like watering with your foot and these specific mountains, it makes them feel so much richer.
It does.
Like they become these powerful symbols, right?
Yay.
Pointing to a deeper truth.
They highlight that constant tension between self-reliance and dependence on God. And that tension, that's something we still grapple with today, you know,
yeah.
Even if our promised land, so to speak, looks a little bit different.
Right, right. That's a great point. And speaking of the details of their lives, let's dive into that actual law code that's laid out in Deuteronomy chapters 12 through 26.
Okay.
Now, I know law code might not exactly scream excitement.
Right.
But trust me, there is a lot to unpack here. Okay, so we're getting into this law code, chapters 12 through 26. It's pretty detailed, right?
It is. It's a lot to take in.
But I think what's fascinating is it's not just this, like, you know, random collection of rules.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, very intentional. Like, it's this framework designed to shape their identity.
Yeah, as God's people in this new land.
Exactly. So it's about way more than just don't do this, don't do that.
It is. It gets at the heart of, you know, who they are,
yeah.
How they live their lives, in every aspect.
Okay. Yeah, I see that.
And one example that I think really illustrates this well is this command about the sanctuary. So they're told to only have one central sanctuary for worship.
Ah, okay. So why is that so important?
Well, remember, in Egypt, they were surrounded by all these temples and idols.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So this is about cutting through all that noise.
Okay.
Establishing this really clear focus.
Ah, okay. So it's like a powerful statement about their commitment to the one true God.
Exactly. By centralizing their worship, they're unifying themselves.
Yeah.
And they're drawing a clear line against idolatry.
Yeah. Like it's saying, this is who we are. This is what we stand for.
Mm-hmm.
There's no room for compromise.
And that emphasis on unity and purity, it extends to other areas of the law code as well.
Oh. Yeah.
You know, there are detailed instructions about what they can eat, how they should treat animals, even how they should conduct business. It's all about weaving these principles into the fabric of everyday life.
So it's not just these big theological concepts, but it's about, you know, bringing those concepts into their daily routines, interactions.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's about creating a society that reflects God's character, even in the smallest details.
One thing that really stands out to me in these laws is this focus on justice and compassion.
Yes.
Especially towards, you know, those who are vulnerable.
Right.
Widows, orphans, the foreigners.
Yeah. Remember that poetic parallelism we talked about, where God, as the ultimate king, he champions those who are marginalized?
Right, right. Okay.
Well, here we see that same principle put into action through specific laws.
So it's not just about being generally good, but it's about taking, you know, specific steps, concrete steps to care for those in need.
Right. It's about demonstrating their love for God through their actions towards others.
Right. And these weren't just seen as like, oh, this is a suggestion or, you know, it would be nice if you did this. It was like integral to their covenant with God.
It was. Exactly.
Yeah. It's like that saying, faith without works is dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's about putting their faith into action.
It is. And there's also this constant emphasis in the law code on remembering their history.
Okay.
They are continually reminded of where they came from, God's faithfulness in delivering them from slavery. It's like these stories are woven into the very fabric of their legal system.
It makes me think about how families pass down stories through the generations.
By the way, it shapes us.
It shapes our identity, our sense of belonging. And these stories, they kind of had that similar function for the Israelites.
Exactly. These stories weren't just for entertainment, right?
Right.
They were meant to inspire gratitude, obedience, and trust in God.
So if we could, like, zoom out for a second and look at the big picture.
Okay.
What does this law code tell us about, like, the heart of God's law?
I think it's about relationship. It's about God inviting his people into a covenant of love and faithfulness.
Okay.
And it's about shaping a community that reflects his character in every aspect of life.
Okay.
Wait. From their worship to their care for those who are most vulnerable.
It's a blueprint for a life that's both deeply personal and profoundly outward focused.
It is. And it challenges us to consider how we might reflect these same values in our own lives.
You know, it really does.
Like, how are we demonstrating our love for God in tangible ways?
Right.
How are we caring for those in need in our communities? Mm-hmm. How are we weaving our faith into the fabric of our daily lives and routines?
Those are some really great questions.
Yeah.
And I think that's the beauty of these chapters in Deuteronomy.
Mm-hmm.
They challenge us to move beyond just knowing the rules.
Right.
And really, like, grapple with that deeper meaning.
Yeah.
The application of God's law in our own lives.
It's an invitation to live out our faith, not just in word, but in deed.
Well said. Well said.
Yeah.
And as always, this deep dive, it's just the beginning, right?
It is.
Deuteronomy, like all the scripture, it's got, you know, layers upon layers of meaning to uncover. So keep exploring, keep asking those questions, and just keep allowing these ancient words to speak to your life in freshened and unexpected ways. Thanks for joining us.